Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, you level 3 Ludramons. This week we're putting out a podcast that DJ recorded earlier on in the pandemic with Shane McNally from the Stage Left podcast. It was a really, really good chat that the two boys had. But some of the bits of it were edited just because it was about pubs reopening and shite like that. And also, I was unfortunately unable to make this podcast because I think I was stuck in traffic after helping one of the boys move house. But two lads had a great chat, so I hope you enjoy it anyway.
So I'm actually delighted to be joined this week by a long-time online friend and now face-to-face friend of myself personally, and Shane McNally. Shane is the co-host of the Stage Left podcast and is an activist for social causes on Twitter. I think that's one way of putting it, Shane. You're sitting there and...
Maybe a nuisance. Yeah, sitting here in my Bose jersey.
I was going to say, you're sitting there in your Bohemians Refugees Welcome jersey, which I actually have as well upstairs. Have a no affiliation to Bohemians whatsoever, but definitely one of the greatest jerseys in League of Ireland history, if not football history. Welcome to the Snowcast, man. It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to link up for a couple of pints in Wexford at some stage, but look, cans over Zoom or our growlers over Zoom have to do. So welcome, man. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Well, no, thanks a million. It's great to be on. Like I was just saying off air, I've enjoyed listening to it, and like we've had great chats on Twitter and stuff. So it's nice to be able to. I don't know, virtually face-to-face anyway. It's a start. We'll get points someday, hopefully. Yeah, whatever this new normal is and stuff. But yeah, no, cheers. I'm looking forward to the chats. I think we've a few nice things to get our teeth into. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I was saying in the introductions there, you're a co-host of the Stage Left podcast, which is a left-wing media platform that you've been trying to get up and running. And we were actually chatting about the trials and tribulations of it there off air. But I suppose actually before we get stuck into that, I just want to ask you the thing that we keep forgetting these days with the Zoom cans, we're too eager to get stuck in straight away. What are you drinking tonight, Shane?
So I started off, and this will kind of maybe fit into our later talk, but I started off trying something that I thought was a decent beer ages ago, and there was a can of it in the fridge, so I'll give it a go. So I started off with a Hazy Jane from Brewdog to see how it measured up. It was terrible. So I went back to an old favourite, Trouble Brewing. I suppose Trouble Brewing got myself and a good mate of mine, Rob, started off on our kind of craft beer journey. Oh, this must be 2008 or 2009. I'd have to dig up the Facebook memories or whatever, but they came out when they just started and did a beer tasting with a food and wine society we had in Maynooth. And the lads did a bit of a tasting with us there, and yeah, they've had a special place in my heart since. But you know, their beers have obviously evolved over a decade, and they've gotten better and better. Really, really nice guys as well. So I'm drinking the Viet now. So that was pre-COVID on draft only. So I think it was PMAX. I think it was in Dublin. I might have that wrong. But they canned it, and I'm glad they canned it because it's absolutely amazing IPA. Nice multi backbone, loads of hops, you know, really, really long-lasting finish. So exactly what you want from an IPA. And it's not really that cloudy, so it's not that, you know, murky New England IPA as well. Sometimes it's nice to go, yeah, there you go. It's something similar to what you're drinking yourself.
Yeah, brilliant. And I actually haven't had the Vietnam IPA yet from Trouble Brewing, but they've had some absolute bangers down through the years, and it's great. It's great to see a company like them go from growth to growth and just keep bringing out bangers and great beers, because, like you said, they've been going quite a while now, and they were certainly at the first wave of the craft beer revolution in Ireland back over a decade ago now. Like 2008 would have been when I started off in university, and like we had the Franwell down in Cork, and yep. You know, that was it really. That was pretty much your selection of craft beer. As you said, we'll get our teeth into that a bit more later. Hopefully Owen will join us for that, because he's very opinionated when it comes to this stuff. And there's nothing he loves more than reminiscing about drinking random beers back in the day. But yeah, myself, I'm drinking the 8 Degrees Full Irish IPA, the single malt IPA, which is an absolute body full of flavor. It's really, really good. I think you've had it yourself, Shane, haven't you?
I have indeed, yeah. And again, really, really solid kind of malty backbone, but then loads of hops. And then yeah. It's that real kind of pine needly kind of hops as well. So it's kind of old school in that respect. Like, but sometimes you just want an IPA like that, you know. That's why I start drinking IPAs, like, you know, it's that kind of American West Coast style.
Yeah, like I love this like during the summer, I love a good, like, just hazy, fruity, like really fruity and hazy IPA. But there's something to be said. And actually, it's been a very mixed bag of weather here today. And there's a lot to be said for like a malty, like caramelly, touch caramel, like really, really lovely, deep IPA. Again, like you said, that classic old style IPA that has that front load with malt, and then the hops kick in. And it's a lovely little playful mixture on your palate. For me, what I love about drinking different beers, and I suppose like this is the thing, I love seasonal drinking, and I love looking outside. That's what I love about the plinth of cans that we keep harping on about in Worldwide Wines, is you can literally go in, look outside the window and say what the weather is like today, and mix and match your drinks accordingly. And it's one of those IPAs that just goes well all year round. And if you like hops, there's a good deal of hops, as you said, but there's a lovely maltiness as well. It brings a really good balance. Like, as I said, it's just playing with your taste buds as you drink it. And it's a super clean finish for a malty, hoppy IPA. Like, you know, it's really, really nice.
Just well balanced. Like, you know, kind of veering into wine speak here. So give me a kick if I do that, right? Because that's the day job. But But it's kind of nice, like we've kind of talked about, like a bit, you know, touched on it anyway, like this evolution of, right, so 8 Degrees and Trouble Brewing kind of started around the same time, like, and they were not quite the forerunners, but like certainly at the very, very start of this kind of craft beer wave. And it's great to see that, you know, from start to finish, not from to finish, but start to now, is that like they've just, like you say, evolved over time, but also gotten better and more consistent. And they've got like classic styles here that like you could put up against some of the best in the world and say, right, you know what, they'd be able to stand up to beside them, no problem. And you know, it's if I wanted to tell someone about a classical West Coast style, I think you could give them either of these two beers and they'd say, yeah, that's great, I get West Coast IPAs now. Now, not every craft beer is going to have that consistency, but it's great to see that these two guys, like, you know, they have kind of evolved over the years and just, you know, gone from strength to strength, really.
Yeah, and I think that the key characteristic is like for an IPA, there's that little earthiness. It's like just that lovely kind of earthy feeling on and taste around your tongue as you drink it, which really sets it apart from the kind of more fruity, summery IPAs, like the super tropical IPA from Blacks that I'm a huge fucking fan of, man. I will drink that on any sunny day, but it's distinctly different from what we're drinking tonight. And actually, I don't know what the weather is like where you are, but for me, as someone who really, like, the weather influences how what I choose to drink, like, this is the perfect drink for a day that's been, like, the sun has broken through and it's mixed weather. It's a bit overcast now. It was pissing rain at lunchtime the one time I stepped outside the door. You know, it's just the perfect drink for that day.
Yeah, do you know, I think I probably wanted a bit of consistency in my life, because I woke up this morning and I had to put a jumper on when I was walking the dog because it was freezing. I went out for a run earlier and I practically fucking melted. Maybe that's what I wanted. Like, the weather's bonkers, so I want something consistent to drink. Yeah. Maybe I'm doing the same as you. Just
that's absolutely it. Shane, we mentioned here actually just before that about Stage Left podcast, which you were co-host with, and it was something that you really got running around the local elections last time around to give, I suppose, a left-wing perspective and some media in the southeast, in particular Wexford. And we were talking off air, and I thought it might be worth getting into a bit, specifically considering, like, you know, we struggled to get podcasts together over the last month or two, and there are signs where we've really struggled to get them out, and you haven't done one in a couple of months. Just independent podcasting, how have you found it? And I suppose, how can independent podcasters support each other more?
Yeah, like, it's a tricky question, like, because I suppose, like, we'll go into, I suppose, what we were talking about off air, but it's something I'd love to devote, like, so much more time to, because what we saw, just even doing the small bit that we did in Wexford, just kind of interviewing local left candidates and giving them a bit of a platform, and just like this kind of, you know, having the chats, it's quite a good medium to be somewhat casual, because you're not, you know, you do have a time limit, like, you try to keep it to, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes or whatever, but it's not 5 minutes long on the radio where, you know, someone's gonna have to just give you the bullet points or, you know, whatever the tagline is of the day, and you just don't get any substance. So a lot of the feedback that we got was like, oh yeah, we felt like we got to know some of the counselors, and yeah, certainly made me go look at that policy a little bit more, or whatever. So that was great, like, just to be able to do it. And you know, yourself, you can do it on the cheap, you know, you can buy a microphone and literally plug it into your phone if you want, like, which is great. Like, so it is accessible to a lot of people. However, what's, you know, you can't really buy time, and that's my biggest problem anyway. And look, as you've kind of alluded to it there with yourself, for me, and look, it's for, you know, everyone has different challenges throughout, you know, kind of the COVID crisis, but on a personal level, work has just been absolutely bonkers for me. So, like, this, you know, evens when you come home and just, like, or not come home, you walk out from the home office, you move 5 meters away, and you're like, your brain is cabbage. So, you know, you don't have the energy for it. So that, I think that in itself is difficult, because you know, you want to be able to keep it as regular as possible, but it also takes quite a lot of effort. So, you know, the listeners, they'll listen to it, and it might be a nice 45 minutes when they're out for a walk or a run and stuff, but it doesn't take 45 minutes to do a podcast, as you well know. There's all the editing that goes around in the background, and there's certainly the prep beforehand. We like to all pretend that we do loads of prep and have scripts and stuff, but no, there is a lot of effort that goes in. And I suppose a lot of us are learning on the fly as well. Like, you know, I hadn't edited audio since probably back when I was in Maynooth, and I don't want to tell anyone how long ago that was, but it was a while ago, so, as you can imagine. And, you know, a lot of us, I suppose, are learning through error, really, like, you know, just kind of, you know, like, flying by the seat of our pants, as they might say. And that takes its toll as well, because you're like, oh, you know, right, something's gone wrong here, I don't know what to do. So, like, I suppose there's lots of opportunities for more collaboration, like, you know, to kind of maybe answer the question that you've asked, like, how do we move on? But there's a lot of things we can teach each other, I think, you know, so more kind of collaboration across maybe genres as opposed to platforms is the right idea. So, you know, there's lots of indie lefty podcasts out there, but then there's lots of, you know, other podcasts out there. You know, it could be the Simpsons podcast you were on the other day. Do you know what I mean? Like, but there is kind of synergies there where you could kind of, maybe we could all help each other out. Like, what I'd love to see, just on a personal level, is that there's like an umbrella organization for lefty podcasts, but it's not just, you know, lefty politics. It's actually, you know, arts and, you know, cultural stuff as well, where, you know, there's a hub there for all these podcasts, and there's people there like almost full time, or, and that's what you'd want, really. Because, like, yeah, look, effectively, and I'm gonna go on, basically, I'm the meme, right? You know, has two pints and turns into, you know, feckin' Lennon, right? That's, I am that meme, so I'm sorry. But no, like, there's a lot of opportunity for us to kind of, you know, learn from each other. But then there's also an opportunity that it doesn't just become free labor, because it is what we're, you know, a lot of us are. I don't feel like that, if you know what I mean. But when you look at it practically, we are giving free labor to produce something. And, you know, we have day jobs to be able to try and do this, if you know what I mean. But if, you know, if the government, you know, just to say it as an example, if local governments start giving grants to podcasts and stuff to get them going and stuff like that, would make things a lot easier, things like that. So yeah, there's loads of things we can do to make it easier for ourselves. But I think we're, yeah, certainly only baby steps at the moment. We've have a lot of development to do. Well, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, DJ, but
yeah, there's some brilliant points there. I mean, I would certainly say, when you talk about like maybe local government funding, there's an opportunity there maybe for sort of like a podcast co-op, if for want of a better phrase. Because I know that the platform we use for distribution, Anchor, who are really good, there's limitations to Anchor, but you're getting it for free. So it distributes everywhere. So it's really, really good for us who are, like, as you said, learning on the fly, independent, having a fucking clue what we're doing, just want to have a few points in the chat.
Yeah.
It's the ideal way to get us a platform. And actually, like, I think we passed like 15,000 downloads today, which for us, like, I mean, I know there's other independent podcasts that probably get that a week, or Blind Boy, who gets it like an hour. But like, the beauty of it is, like, you know, for us, that's amazing, because we talking about Phil Grimes earlier, we literally came up with the concept of this entire podcast, sitting in Phil Grimes saying, like, we just had an amazing conversation, why don't we fucking record one sometime? Yeah. And that's how it became, it kind of grew. What I think is brilliant is, like, what Anchor do in New York in their head office is they've got like a shared recording space where any podcaster who uses Anchor can book in to use the studio. And then they provide, like, you know, support for the people in the studio, and they promote them as well. And I think that would be an amazing thing for Irish independent podcasts to do, if there was. I know that there's like Head Stuff and The Other Crowd Is At All. There's a couple of different kind of independent-ish groups who have studios on it. I know that, like, say for example, Mother Folklore, where, you know, Peter Kavanagh, who's a friend of the show, is on Mother Folklore, uses that. But then you've looked like what the guys at the Echo Chamber podcast are doing with Tortoise Shack and providing a platform for people there. This kind of thinking, I think, is really good for promoting independent podcasts. Like, you look at the Tortoise Shack, for example, if you're talking about lefty podcasts.
It's great you've mentioned Echo Chamber, because, like, you know, they've got their Patreon now and stuff, and, like, you know, there is, you can see there's huge appetite for it. But I suppose, you know, Tony wouldn't, you know, give out to us for saying it, but they do need more to be viable. And I suppose that goes back to that point, like, essentially it is free labor, if you know what I mean. And it's not just that, but they're also up against, you know, all the big boys who have money as well. Like, so, you know, we are, as independent podcast producers, that we're up against people with deep pockets, all the recording things that they absolutely need. And the thing is, a lot of the independents have the content. These guys just have the actual hardware, if you know what I mean, and the market presence. So, some sort of collectivization of resource on the independent side of things, like a co-op you've mentioned. You've kind of probably robbed one of my points for later when we talk about craft, but anyway, like, we'll go to that. Well, I think that's a fantastic idea, and it's something we should be really, really thinking about.
Because I'm laughing, I'm thinking, like, I'm talking to a guy who's a co-host of a podcast called Stage Left, and we're talking about unionizing the podcast.
How long did that take?
I think as well, like, to take into account, you know, I went on to Spotify today to play a song, and I get a push notification, do you want to listen to Michelle Obama's podcast, you know, you know, Joe Rogan signed this, like, million dollar deal with Spotify, and, like, you know, for exclusivity, and I'm there looking at it thinking, like, editing our podcast over Zoom over the last couple of months, where I've had issues with laptops, I got a laptop issue sorted, and now I'm like, last week editing the last podcast, I was like, I need to buy a new mic. And then it literally became a choice, you know, in the last few weeks of me, of buying a new microphone, or you know, there was someone like, actually get my car serviced, and it was the microphone or car service. I had to get the car serviced and get it ready for the NCT. And you're like, that's the challenge that independent podcasts are faced, that like, you know, your bigger podcasts don't have that challenge. And what I think is great, the only thing I'd say is, like, you know, at least, you know, when you're listening to independent podcasts, like, there's no one, nobody owns that material, only the person who's creating it. Like, nobody's telling me, like, as I said, like, we don't have Diageo whispering in our ear, stop promoting, you know, independent beer. Instead, we can drink what we want, talk about what we want, say what we want, and so long as it's not libelous, we're not getting it. and there's no contractual obligations, which is brilliant.
Yeah, there's an element of freedom in that respect, like, which, you know, have to be encouraged and preserved, like, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think as well, there's a fierce enjoyment, and I suppose it's the thing, when you have full ownership over something, like myself and Owen have over Snowcast, and you guys have over Stage Left, is when you do something that you're really proud of. Like, there's a few podcasts that we've done that, like, you know, the first one we did with Finn Dwyer and Billy Burns, where, like, you know, Finn was a fucking idol, and then you get to meet the guy and have pints with him and talk about, like, going on a beer with Rasputin and Robespierre, and it's like,
this is a great episode.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, you know, like, I just remember stumbling onto the train back to Waterford that day, thinking, like, you know, all the hardship, and there is hardship associated with it. And, like, for the thing is, like, with Snowcast, it's easy because we set a very low bar of expectation. So there isn't that much that goes into it, to be fair. We just need the time to be present. But in fairness, like, it's easy enough to do. But I will say, like, when you do something like that, there's no substitute. Like, even with the live show that we did, and we're going to try and do a couple of more next year if we can, to support, if for any other reason but to support the likes of Phil Grimes and Grady's Yard and get people in the door there, if we can, is hopefully we'll get you down, Shane, and get you on the Raz in Waterford for one of them.
Definitely. But
if we can do that, it makes it worthwhile, you know. That night we did a live show, like, we had guys come from Wexford, Cork, to come see the live show with Finn. Some of them for us, surprisingly enough, you know. But it was just a brilliant experience. And I think that's the thing, like, it's the collaborations with Finn. It's having yourself, Peter Kavanagh, Tony Groves on the podcast as well, and then pushing us as well as us pushing them and that kind of stuff. I guess the collaborative approach is what will keep the independent podcast alive. And I think we do all, like, no matter what you think of the podcast, and I actually, myself and Owen both enjoy Blind Boys podcast, but you know what? He fucking stays independent. And in fairness, he's a great role model for independent podcasters. Not that we'll ever achieve what he's achieved in podcasting, but, like, you know, it's someone to look up to. And I just hope he never listens to Snowcast, because he gets mad at the audio fidelity, whether it's in the pub or on the Zoom. Unfortunately, Owen's been in contact via WhatsApp. There's been a mishap. He's alive, he's safe, but he's not joining us this week, unfortunately. No.
Live drama. Recorded podcast.
I'm gonna speak on both of our behalfs for the rest of this podcast now. I might do my best Owen impression. I don't know. People at work tell us we sound the exact same on the phone, so I presume we don't sound the same via podcast.
Definitely not.
Yeah, that's a good thing. So we're here, and I suppose, Shane, we've been in talks over the last 2 years now that we're doing Snowcast. I think we set up our Twitter page 2 years ago, so obviously we're about 2 years ago now, and we've pretty much been in talks since day one. In fairness, you've been with us since about day one, and we've been talks about getting you on the podcast and on the chat, and ultimately, just like with Wayne and Janice Stone a couple of weeks ago, if not a month ago now, it was a tweet that bit the bullet for me, that I said, right, we said, come on, let's do it, let's record. And you just tweeted, what is a craft beer?
I think I did that format. Okay, I'll bite. What's a craft beer? Basically, I was bored and I wanted to start an argument on Twitter. Oh, no.
I was like, have I missaid something on the podcast and he's listening now? But I was like, that's very Aristotle of you. Like, do you want to come on the podcast and discuss it? So look, you like you said yourself, you're in the wine industry. You're a big fan of craft beer, independent craft beer, as long as I've known you on Twitter. We've had many a discussion about a beer. And I suppose, answer your own question, will you? What's a craft beer?
Jesus, how long do you have?
Yeah.
It's such a tricky, it's almost, right, I don't want to say it's almost like Brexit because it's not, but it's become kind of a floating signifier, craft, right? Okay, so you see craft, and what does that mean, right? So what that means to me and you, I'd say, is probably somewhat aligned, but I'm sure we'll have differences. But what that means to the general public is completely, it could mean anything from, I know Wayne mentioned Qtor and all that kind of rubbish being co-opted and things like that. But it also, you know, culturally means something entirely different because you've got a whole, I suppose, in this late capitalist nightmare that we have, is you've got lots of crafted things in inverted commas for the listeners. So I'm not doing the quotes. It's basically faux craft. It's stuff that, like, you know, it's gentrification of craft industries, basically. You know, that's so, you know, there's a huge spectrum of what craft actually means. And it's something like, so I was being a little bit bold on Twitter, imagine that. But <Yeah. laughs> I am quite interested to get people's thoughts on this because I have my own opinions of what I think craft is. And I don't think anyone can have, you know, fit all the criteria of what I think craft is. I think it's more so what it could be because, like I mentioned, the big C word there, capitalism, it's very difficult to, I suppose, craft something ethically in a capitalist system. It's certainly very difficult to source things ethically. It's certainly difficult to sometimes even have normal human interactions. but what it boils down for me, right, and this is a very long-winded way of me answering your question, DJ, I'm sorry, but I do this, especially after a couple of points.
My question is your question, so answer however you want.
True enough, actually, yeah. I like how you've done that. I suppose craft for me, right, if I had to boil it down to one word, it's people. And I think Wayne actually quite eloquently said this on a couple of episodes ago for you, like, and he spoke at length about some of the people we have in the craft beer industry here. But what I mean by people is how close that person is to the person who's crafted or made something. And that works for workers in breweries, that works for people working behind the bar, that works for me and you, you know, propping up the bar in wherever it is in Waterford we might be, and hopefully, you know, a couple of months time, or that's probably too optimistic, but you know what I mean. And I suppose, like, I will, you know, put my Marxist hat on for a second, right? And it's, you know, the whole kind of, well, I don't know if you want me to go into, you know, worker alienation and stuff like that, but, you know, this kind of society that we have now, people are always removed and further removed and further removed again from something that they purchase. And, you know, you purchase a product and you probably know very little about what's behind that product or who made it. But that actually works along the chain, whereas people who are making that product don't know much about that product. They might just know one tiny little part. And what that alienation is that they're just a cog in a machine and it doesn't really matter. They just repeat the same process day in, day out. So, you know, to give the analogy of a big brewery, there might be someone who just sticks on a label and that's it. That's their job. They'll stick on 100 labels in an hour. They'll stick on 200 labels in an hour, but have no idea what's in the product that they're labeling, or no idea what happens to it afterwards. Whereas if you get a true craft beer, you should be able to say, do you know what? That beer right there has DJ on it, right? That's his stamp on it. He's craft. That's his recipe. That's also his, say it's a family run, or actually no, that's a Waterford co-op, right? That's 10 people there making that beer. They've got their stamp on it. There's a story behind it. And actually the malt that they're using is sourced locally from, you know, one of the farmers that they work with, because, you know, he gets whatever's left over for the cattle or whatever. So you can kind of see what I mean, right? Like, to boil it down again, like, just that craft is people. And I think it's a very easy demarcation to make then when you've got a beer like we have here that, you know, so we could talk about the guys at Trouble Brewing, and, you know, I'd be confident in the fact that right? They're a brewery that have gone from day one and evolved over time. They're also a brewery that pays a living wage, so cares about their staff. So again, that's that element of people there. And they're part of a wider kind of craft beer kind of community. So I don't know whether I'm kind of making sense there, like, because that's quite still a wide spectrum, but that's what craft is to me. Sticking a load of hops in something just because someone's giving you €1 million to go buy a brewery and set one up somewhere, even though it's a subsidiary of someone a bit bigger or whatever it is, it's venture capital rubbish. Well, straight away, that's all stuff that's removed from people's stories. It's not attached to someone actually crafting something in inverted commas. So yeah, look, that's a very, very long-winded answer, but I don't think I have a definitive answer. I just think I have a definitive idea of what I think craft is, if that answers my question, like you said.
it's a great answer, because I think, you've hit on a lot of really important points. For me, like, I still think you have to admire, take Joe and Ballyclickhaven, for example.
Yep.
Who worked with Smittix for a long while and learned a lot of his skill with Smittix. So, like, there are brewers and guys working with Diageo and with Smittix and that who are master craftsmen. So, sometimes I feel like, we do hate on them a bit, and it's a bit like taking away from the individuals in those companies. But what I would say is, take Costello's, for example, in Kilkenny, who, tagged me in a tweet today, which I thought was brilliant, where they were talking about, here's a thought, compulsory entrepreneurship, which in brackets, economic conscription for a 2-year stint, give everyone an insight into what it takes to run a business to generate an income. And I thought it was actually, look, it was a really interesting outlook, because as I said, if you had to do that, everyone might choose more local and more sustainable consumables, including local, lovely, independent beer, when they're faced with the choice in the supermarket, in the pub, etc. If they understood what went into creating a pint of, Costello's Beyond the Pale or Spelt Lager versus, your pint of Smittix and what's actually behind them. So there is that element of it. I think, as well, when you look at marketing budgets, and we've talked a good bit on this podcast at various stages about marketing budgets, and obviously Guinness are the marketing geniuses. We have to give it to them. And they market themselves as distinctly Irish, and the 1759, the two-part pour for the 6 o'clock Angelus. But Arthur Guinness himself was, would turning his grave at the thought of someone stopping for a Catholic Angelus. Do you know what I mean? You've got this hypocrisy that, they're very smart about, and I have to give them credit for. And I think,
of course, I think just to jump in on that point, because I think you're dead right, that there's some amazing people who, I'm speaking in a personal capacity here, because I sell branded stuff, that's my job on a day-to-day basis. But there's some amazing people within the wider beer industry who, work for some of the big boys. And like I said at the start, you can't really remove that. That's just the system that we have at the moment. You don't want to take away from that. But it will also be, I'm sure, the conversation will evolve this way anyway. But it also illustrates some of the barriers that are there, because, you've talked about marketing budgets and stuff like that, and the fact that craft beer, it's still barely scratching the surface of 3% in the market. So there are brilliant people that we all learn from and collaborate from, and they're not at fault. Just there's a wider system there that just is in play. It's just kind of what you're saying there, that it just creates a block, and there's no way you can, as a DJ creating his beer, and it's great, and I've gotten taste and I've gotten to know you. I've had the time to get to know you, and this is probably a theme for this episode as well as time, but we've had the chance, and great, he's crafted this, and I've been able to take the time to understand this. You don't need to do that with the Guinness, and Guinness is great, it's ticks the boxes, it's consistent, but there's a reason for that, like you say, it's all that the marketing budget, and the fact that they are effectively just this monolithic element in the craft beer, I suppose. What's the word I'm looking for? not environment, but you know where I'm getting at, as in, like, you know, they own the biggest slice of the pie. And when you're that big, your natural, I suppose, predisposition as something that big is to continue to be that big. And that's not individuals' fault within that. It's just that's the situation we have at the moment.
I think, like, the key differential for me, and I think like independent brewers, like we spoke about Trouble Brewing and 8 Degrees earlier, we've mentioned Costello's, and the Grady's Yards, Blacks and Sales of this world, Dead Centers, you know, who we talk about, Kildare Brewing, on this podcast all the time. They made a very smart choice in the last 2 years to rebrand themselves as independent craft beer. And I think that's the key term. Because as we talked about earlier, 2008, 2009, the mid-2000s, the first craft beer revolution in Ireland of our generation, say. You do have Franwell that is down in Cork that ultimately sold a good deal of shares to Molson Coors. And it's this kind of thing that if you associate then that with craft beer and then it gets disassociated to a certain point, I find that very hard to digest. And it's I suppose, getting across to people that, look, it's this independence. And I would really hope that in a post-COVID society, you'd have a much more appreciation of your 12 acres, Ballycliccavan, Costello's, who are using farm material from within a 10-kilometer, 15-kilometer radius of where they're brewing. Everything that goes into their beer comes from within that type of kilometer radius, and that's it. And it's sent off, packaged, it's fresh. And even stuff like expiry dates, you know, the fact that a craft lager might, you know, only last 6, 9, 12 months, it's because they're not pumping it with preservatives. It's because they're producing it fresh and it's straight off the line, you know. This is something that I think really needs to be championed. And I look at it, you know, you look at, you know, a political situation where, you know, you look at a politician will jump at a chance to have a pint of Guinness in their hands, and they'll jump at a chance to give Barack Obama, say, for example, a pint of Guinness. And you're like, yeah, but mate, that's not Irish brewing. Like, as much as it's portrayed worldwide as Irish brewing, if you're in Offaly or that, you know, if you're in the Midlands and you want to give someone a good stout, give them a good fucking stout that's been produced and grown and all the ingredients have come from the Midlands.
Just on that note, right, and it just, you really reminded me of Tomás Clancy, RIP, just amazing wine communicator, who died recently. A lot of people would know him from the movies Booze Talk and News Talk. And he always championed it as well. We're a bit crap at doing in Ireland, but they're brilliant at doing in France and stuff like that, is having these protected regions, like for cheese, for example. He said, look, okay, we've got amazing cheese in Ireland, but we don't protect it. We also have amazing beers in Ireland that we should be able to protect and shout about, because, yeah, we are the home of some of the best stouts in the world, but they're not Guinness. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and we don't do that. Or, like, you know, so some of the beers that we produce, you know, in the Midlands, you picked a lot of Midlands breweries there, like, and that's the kind of things that could put them on the map, really, as a distinctive, dare I say it, terroir driven, like, these are beers that are made in this particular part of the world that are culturally, but also, you know, taste and are unique. They're this little slice of the world that we have, and we can share that with people. But you've kind of touched on a few things there, DJ, like, I'm going to go back to it, because post-COVID, right, so, yeah, local sourcing is not just ethical, but it's probably environmentally necessary that we kind of think in this way, as opposed to having massive global supply chains that are completely dependent on mass transport of stuff back and forth. Like, the, you know, the supply chains of, well, the food supply chains we have are just not really sustainable for the future, but they're also just not needed, because most of what we have, we can produce, and then you can, you know, if you really want some hops from New Zealand, yeah, you can bring that in, but that's a luxury. Like, you get all the rest of your components are here. And I think that fits into a wider sense of, you know, okay, what is craft beer, but also what do we want our beer communities to be and our social, how we socialize, what we want that to be as well. And Owen kind of touched on it on the last episode. It was more so, and we probably will get onto this, but about the types of pubs that are suffering. And, you know, a lot of them are rural, a lot of them are but the social hubs of communities. But, you know, so should, you know, local craft breweries. They should be a social hub. And if you can marry all this together and, you know, get everyone in the community kind of invest into these things, well, actually, it all starts to fall into place. Because, you know, you've mentioned like the Midlands and people, you know, so dead centers are great. It's a nice, just a nice visual one anyway to talk about. But, you know, people kind of gravitate towards it because, like, okay, they're absolutely whopper beers, but they're also kind of indicative of a place. And, you know, what they've done, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, with the Beer Cloud, they've kind of like come up with a co-op collaboration with a lot of the other kind of Midlands breweries and say, look, we're going to get our beers out to people because we can't send them out to the pubs. But at least there's a kind of a community element to that, in the sense that we're a group of people here who are kind of working together. And I think you can build that philosophy. That again, it goes back to what I'm saying, what craft beer is, that puts people centered to the conversation, if you know what I mean. And yeah. I don't think we're quite there yet. But there's a lot of, I suppose, green shoots, maybe you could call them, of that idea is starting to take hold. Like, you know, you've got co-op. So yeah, everybody knows that, you know, especially rural pubs, but smaller towns and stuff, pubs are decimated. And what's happening in the UK is a lot of them are being purchased by communities, and they essentially own the space, so it becomes a social hub. And you know, that then becomes something that the community invests in, and they get to decide, like, what happens? Does the pub have to be for profit anymore, or, you know, can we just, you know, rake that profit back into our community? And there's endless possibilities. But for me, right, you know, what is craft again? Going back to it. It should always be about putting people, you know, for front and center. And I think if we work towards there, we'll be in a much better place. We certainly will be in better than 3% market share. But anyway, yeah. That's just my thoughts.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, in fairness, you've given us the title of the podcast. I think I've written it down. Gentrification of the craft industries is going to be the title of the podcast. It's one of the great lines we've heard in Snowcast over the last 2 years. Thanks for that one.
Shared it with me, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy days. Glad to provide it.
Absolutely, you're in folklore now. Look, guys, we've launched that fundraiser for the Solo Centre today. If you could go and support it, we'd be eternally grateful. We're looking for donations. I think the minimum donation is €3. We'll take all donations. If you donate €5, you'll be entered into a raffle for a hamper, which is well worth winning from Phil Grimes Pub. On top of that, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook at Snowcast. And also, you know, the crack with the Patreon, where www.patreon.com/Snowcast. If you want to give us a couple of pounds a month to keep these podcasts going, to get better equipment, to allow me to buy that microphone I was talking about earlier, please do and give us your support. And just thanks for listening. Share with your friends. It means an awful fucking lot to us. We hit 15K tonight, which is brilliant. So stay with it, lads. And look, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week, hopefully, and sláinte, Díobh go léir.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.